Day two of processing in. I have not yet had anything to drink or eat. We stand there, a line of 12 women, in a freezing open warehouse that is so huge you could put a volleyball court inside of it. We are nude while deputies with guns order us to squat and cough while they shine flashlights up our asses and vaginas. The woman next to me, probably in her 40s, is on her period. "I'm bleeding," she says. She is crying softly. "Shut up and squat," her deputy says. I watch her menstrual blood flow to the floor. A rabbi who I spoke to for comfort in the days leading up to my surrender to Century Regional Detention Facility said, "They can take your clothes, but they can't take your dignity." He was wrong. I know this now as I comply with orders in this barn-like structure. It is intolerably cold and dark and cavernous. I am not afraid. I am outraged. After they shine their flashlight at me, hands on their guns, then order me to give up my clothes and put their plastic underwear and size triple X blues on, the God I think I know is incinerated. A rogue hatred settles into my spirit and makes a rat's nest of that small part of me where I store such things. Even in the years to come, I cannot release the memory of such indignity, the exposure of my most private body under threat of gun and billy club to people who collect a paycheck for probing me there. There is a reason people use the cattle metaphor when speaking about jails. When I am dressed in my blues and shoes, two sizes too large for me, I am marched back with the others again into the holding cell. Except when in the strip search area, I have been in this holding cell for nearly 2 days, stuffed full of women sitting on the urine-soaked floor. The cell is packed. There must be 100 of us shoved into a space the size of a garden shed. The other 3 holding cells are also exploding with bodies, so many that the barred doors, throwback to an earlier time before steel firewalled doors, cannot be locked. I still have not eaten. I have not had a drink. I don't know what time it is. The clock on the wall is stuck at 2:37. Hours pass by, each minute an entire anthem to human depravity. At one point, a young woman scowls at a huge, butchy guard. The guard tells her, "Wipe that off your face." The young woman says, "Fuck you." It happens so fast, she is dragged from the holding cell and handcuffed. She kicks out, flailing, and is tased and hauled away. I have seen people discard trash with more sensitivity. In that moment, the memory of my last arrest, the violence of it, comes to the surface. I am momentarily unable to breathe as I shove it down in a way to be dealt with later. While in holding, one woman braids my hair for me. She is very thin and frail. Another offers to trade shoes. Hers are too small for her, but they fit me perfectly. A third offers me a spot on the bench, moving over to make room for my tiny body. In jail, where overcrowding is the norm, it pays to be small. When lukewarm milk and plastic-wrapped meat product burritos arrive, my stomach turns. I give mine to the prostitute next to me. I am almost 6 months clean and sober, and I spend the time in holding staring in amazement at the junkies and prostitutes, thinking about how I got here. It is not easy because due to the blackout, all I remember of it is the beating I took at the hands of LAPD, a relentless memory that invades my thinking with a stubborn regularity, like a drumbeat that never stops. For 414 days until, miraculously, I stopped drinking and using, I lived in a state of chronic blackout. According to neuroscientists, the alcohol and drug-induced blackout is not simply a case of memory loss. People who suffer from blackouts never retrieve their memories because there are no memories to retrieve. The mind-altering substances in high doses interfere with the way the brain processes and makes memories. In a blackout, because of the drugs and/or alcohol, no memories are ever recorded by the brain. It is as if your life never happened. This would not be true for the people I most damaged by my drinking and using. They remembered everything. As I sit there waiting, waiting, waiting to be processed, I try to hold on to the thought that at least I am sober. I am sober as they pull me out of the cell to take my mugshot. It will be my 4th one, and I know my last. I understood then, after having my photo taken by police over and over again, why in some cultures it is believed that photographs steal your soul. After that, they fit my wrist with a band. It looks like an industrial-grade hospital band, but it is secured with unbreakable grommets. The deputy puts it on too tight. I am skin and bones, and it rubs my wrist, already torn and scarred by handcuffs, raw and bloody. The wristband contains my name and booking number and a barcode. I don't know what the barcode is for until one day in my last module, one of the deputies scans it with a handheld device, and every piece of information you could ever want about me, age, criminal charges, release dates, etc., pops up on his small portable screen.